Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Phoenix, Arizona, it's time for Valley Business Radio, spotlighting the Valley's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Hello and welcome to Valley Business Radio, where we tell stories that the traditional media tends to ignore and help connect you to the right people. I'm your host, Dr. Adrian McIntyre, and I'm joined in the studio today by three fascinating, brilliant, and interesting characters from our local food and beverage scene. With me is Dalla Alfuertes, principal at FJI. Welcome, Dalla.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being back.
Yes.
I want to refer folks back if they haven't already listened to the interview we did in February. It was one of our first round of guests in this studio, and it's one of my favorite interviews of all time because we went really deep into some of your backstory. We won't rehash all of that here today, but I would just refer folks back to that, and it's really great to see you again.
Thank you.
Also with me is Patty G from Rotten Grapes. You've got two locations in town.
Yes.
Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me as well and for putting me in such great company.
Yeah, you're in good company here.
Yes.
Because also in the house is David DiLorenzo, the D-Lo, owner of Bar and Restaurant Insurance, real deep knowledge and expertise in what it takes to keep the hospitality industry protected from the financial downside of this venture. Welcome, D-Lo.
Thank you. Excited to be here.
Dalla, why don't you catch us up just a little bit? Since we last talked, one of the things that back then was a few months away that now is happening is your Design It Forward competition. What is Design It Forward and how does it serve up-and-coming hospitality business owners here in the Valley?
Sure. So Design It Forward is a contest that we host every year. This would be our third annual. And we basically award one innovative bar restaurant concept with our design services. This year, we kind of kicked it up a notch and we're adding a few bonus offers and you get to work with a graphic designer and a photographer in addition to working with us.
This is the third year of this annual competition. What have you observed in the submissions? I know the deadline is, if not now, it's
like Friday.
Friday, right? How has your vision into what's happening in the Valley been informed by the submissions you're getting for Design It Forward? What are you seeing out there?
I'm seeing that a lot of food trucks or smaller businesses have very innovative ideas. They just need the additional support to get to that next level. But there's plenty of innovation. I think they're paving the way for what the future of food and beverage could look like in Arizona.
And the competition is judged by a panel of experts.
Yes.
Talk a little bit about the process of how the winner will be selected.
Sure. So if I were to select the winner, I think I'd be biased. So I try to step away, be fair, and give the responsibility to experts in the industry. And funny enough, someone that's here in the room with us, the D-Lo, he is actually one of the judges. We have some other local celebrities that are on the panel, chefs, restaurant owners. We try to cover all industries.
Now, this is an opportunity for someone with a concept, with a vision, something they want to make happen in the world, to get the kind of creative and design, which goes beyond aesthetics, mm-hmm. the kind of support that they need to help make that vision a reality. What inspired you to provide this? I mean, you're busy. You're mm-hmm. flying around. Last time I saw you, you were just about to leave to Northern California to do a design sprint. I want to hear a little about that.
Sure.
But what made you think that this sort of design it forward, pay it forward type approach
right.
was a good fit for you and what your vision is?
Well, I don't remember if we talked about this last time, but this started because when I first started my firm about 3.5 years ago, I relied on my community to help me get started. So I spent a week in week one of FJI being born, and I reached out to everybody that I knew in the industry, let them know that I was doing this on my own. And if anybody had advice or leads to send my way, I would happily accept them. And within a matter of a week, I had 5 projects on my desk, and I just was so thankful. I couldn't believe it. And I wanted to thank everybody in my community in return, but I knew that a thank you card would not suffice. So I brought this to my mastermind group and said, here's the dilemma. I need something big, something that will really show my gratitude. And after a couple of brainstorming sessions, Design It Forward is what we landed on.
I love that story because it reveals something about who you are as a business owner and as a human being. You can relate to what it's like to take a huge leap of faith. Mm-hmm. At that moment, you were leaving unexpectedly because the owner of the firm you were with had gotten sick.
Yes.
I remember the story. And, yes. And all of a sudden now you're kind of thrown into this world of, all right, well, I'm going to make a go for it on my own. Uh-huh. And the community really showed up and provided opportunities for you to do the thing you love best.
That's
and the
right.
fact that that would automatically make you think, I want to do this for other people, mm-hmm. says a lot about you. What else, other than that sense of contribution, mm-hmm. what would you say is in the DNA over at FJI?
In what sense? In terms of how we approach design?
How you approach projects. I know there's a lot to say about the aesthetics and experiential side of your work.
Yes.
What makes it all unique?
So this is something I've actually been battling with quite a bit lately, but I feel like the word interior design doesn't quite define what we do because we are more experienced designers. We're looking at the entire experience from start to finish, how people find out about you, what touch points do they come across as they navigate your space, what causes them to come back a second time. At the end of the day, revenue and bottom line is essentially what we need to provide our clients with. So I would say we take a holistic approach that covers a lot of aspects beyond aesthetics.
This is actually a perfect point in this conversation to transition over and ask Patty G, chief executive member, co-owner of Rotten Grapes, who is also a client of
yes.
FJI.
Yes. A friend now. Absolutely.
And a lovely human being. We met
Lifelong.
Just recently at the Roosevelt Row location. But before we get into your backstory a little bit, let's just have you answer that question. What is unique about the services that Dalla and her team provide?
Well, aside from Dalla herself being the extraordinary person that she is, she's very personable. She's, you know, very giving, you know, as you clearly have heard. She's been so wonderful to work with. You know, I have a design background as well, not in interior, but, you know, so I have a little bit of an artistic eye, a creative eye, and she was very open to my words and to my suggestions and didn't poo-poo like, hey, I'm the expert here. You know, she was always very open and willing to, you know, make those little, I don't want to say, you know.
Adjustments.
Yeah. I mean, we made adjustments and, you know, we went with things and we definitely helped each other get to sleep at night because there were some things that were just like, oh my God, mm-hmm. is this really happening or not happening?
It's out of our control.
Out of our control, right? Just like, it's going to be fine. We're going to be the only ones that know.
Don't tell anyone.
I have a sneaking suspicion that kind of chaos and unexpected challenges to be overcome mid-stride is probably in the nature of things. In this interview.
Well, she would definitely be willing to answer that one. But, you know, in my experience with just business in general, yeah, there's always going to be the unexpected. So,
now, you mentioned a background in design, and I was intrigued as I was poking around a little bit preparing for this interview. If you don't mind, can we go all the way back to Gibbs High School?
Oh, my God. You did you?
I did. And what I learned, so yeah. St. Petersburg, Florida.
Yes.
You're going to high school.
I am. I auditioned.
And they have a special magnet school program.
Correct.
For the arts. The Pinellas County Center for the Arts.
Correct, yes.
Was that active? Is that the program
yeah.
that you joined?
It was actually called the Artistic Talented Program until it got a little bit more funding. And then they came up with Pinellas County Center for the Arts because it was starting to get a lot of traction. But if you to go back to the 80s, which I'm a child of the 80s, there was a show called Fame at the time. And
I Want to Live Forever.
That school, it really was the epitome of, you know, that show where, you know, we were inner city. People were traveling from many, many miles away and getting up very early in the morning to come to this particular school for their artistic talent.
Were you bused to the school or were you
yeah,
living nearby?
I was zoned to go to a different school that was a little bit closer, but it wasn't that much further for me, honestly. So
there's another thread to the story with Gibbs High School, which mm-hmm. is it was the very first public school for Black students in the county, founded in 1927 mm-hmm. during segregation, was not desegregated and or integrated, although there's some debate about whether those two words mean the same thing, until 1970. And so very much a mixed urban population. What was it like to be a young adult discovering design in that rich and somewhat also conflicted environment. It's not a school known to be an easy place to go.
No. Like I said, it you know, it was considered an inner city school. I mean, there was railroad tracks like that ran along our property.
So was it on somewhat the industrial wrong side of the tracks, so to speak?
At times it felt like it. But you know, it really was an adventure. I couldn't have asked for a better high school experience, honestly. And not many people would say I would do my high school years over again. I enjoyed it that much. I would do it again. And that included, I had to go to summer school to get in all my credits because I was doing, you know, three periods of art a day. So there was a lot of, you know, interesting days where you'd show up. And I mean, just the crowd was so diverse. You know, that just added to the creativity, in my opinion. You know, it just our whole school was just so diverse with people coming in from everywhere. And then you had local people and whatnot. So, you know, we had a great sports team. So I don't know if you looked
state
at some of our
1960 something.
Yep. Yeah. Football. Yep. Football, basketball.
And a number of pro athletes that came out of that school and went to the league or basketball, baseball, et cetera. So a really fascinating mix. There's one other thread to your story, though, that you talk about in the bio on your website. And that is you're 12 years old.
Yeah.
You go on a trip to Italy.
Yeah.
And at the age of 12, discover wine.
I do.
Okay, now what's that all about? Because so, I'm not sure that's...
There's an interesting little aspect to that whole story, too. At the time, I was going to a Christian school, and I was allowed to go on this week-long trip and miss school in exchange for keeping a journal. So, you know, I'm all into art at this point in my life and always had been. And so I'm making notes and drawing little diagrams of, you know, the paintings and things, because we went in every single basilica there is from Rome to the outskirts, to Tuscany. So I'm keeping this journal and I'm making little notations about, you know, our travels and, you know, the meals and that sort of thing. And Mom's like, keep the wine out of it. Don't talk about the wine. Because, you know, at this particular school, it wasn't a Catholic Christian school. It was like Christian school. So I was brought up in the Baptist church, but also on the Catholic side, because I have family members who are all very Catholic.
Oh, so you get it coming and
going. So, yeah, I got it coming and going.
But the wine was Mom's idea.
Yeah.
If the story you tell is true, and I have no reason.
You know, single mom in limited budget, and she's, you know,
dishing
out.
Through.
Yeah, I'm drinking a lot of bottled water, you know, and this was at the time where you couldn't just drink the water out coming out of the walls like you can now. And I wasn't really that big into pop, but occasionally. So, I mean, it was digging into her finances for this trip. And so she was just like, just drink the wine. It's free.
The wine is free.
Yeah. Drink the wine.
I'm booking my next flight tomorrow. I was not aware that the wine was free. It wasn't free when I was
There was like this package deal, I think, that they had pre-purchased, and there was wine that came with every meal. So
these strands all come together, and the third piece of your story, of course, is the Rottweilers.
Yeah.
And so we've got design and art, we've got wine, and also an early age dog.
Always had dogs in the house. My brothers had a beagle that was, you know, always into trouble. That was fun. My mom and I had gotten a poodle when I was very young. And so that was like my real first dog was a poodle, and she did not like me.
And now the restaurants that you own with Keith, Rotten Grapes, the R-O-T-T in Rotten is about Rottweilers. It's not that the grapes are rotten.
Yeah.
It's that there's Rottweilers and grapes.
There's a couple of little puns on words there, because there's actually a fungus that grows on grapes that's called a noble rot that's beneficial to the final product. And then, you know, some people that aren't into wine probably see it as, you know, overly ripe grapes. So rotten grapes.
That's fine. If the people aren't into wine, there's more for the rest of us.
That's fine. We've got things for them too.
I want to come back in a few minutes and learn about that journey of deciding to open these restaurants and how that's gone. But David DiLorenzo, the D-Lo, I also want to get a little bit of your backstory here. You grew up in Arizona. And how did you find your way forward into the role you are now as the owner of Bar and Restaurant Insurance, the leading expert in hospitality insurance here in the Valley?
Okay, so I was born here. I went to ASU after high school and all that. I worked for Warner Brothers Records in college and did an internship. Lived with my parents for 3 to 4 years during the college days and then after, so that I could make no money and work for free. And I didn't get laid at all living with my parents. But that was a sacrifice that you took, because it was the most kick-ass job ever. So I got to work with the likes of Van Halen and Aerosmith and the Chili Peppers and, I mean, you name it. And I was basically a wet behind the ear kid that was going and bringing people backstage to meet these bands and, you know, bringing their records to get played on the radio stations back in the day when, you know, KUPD was, you know, the number one radio station.
And records were how you played music.
Yeah, CDs, I guess, for me. So after all that, I ended up starting my own company called Diamond in the Rough, which is a marketing company. And the marketing company took off. The record labels all hired me to distribute goodies to kids that were pouring out of the Coliseum, were pouring out of America West at the time after a show. And we put together these brown bags full of CDs and stickers and all sorts of cool promotional items. Then Apple came out and iTunes basically put an end to the record label you know, spending of money and working with the artists the way that it did. So I have always been close with my family, and I stayed at, you know, I stayed here because I did get some job offers to go elsewhere, but I stayed here because I really, you know, we're very Italian family. I love my dad. He's been in insurance for 40 something years, and it never really intrigued me like, oh, insurance, this is going to be so cool. No. But it was one of those things where I had a passion for working close with him, and we have a good relationship. So I started doing that. First 3 years, it was just not of interest. It was, again, it's a product that's very commoditized. Nobody cares unless there's some sort of emotion or passion put, you know, behind it.
And what kind of insurance? Just straight up home insurance, auto insurance, that kind of thing?
Yeah, so he's owned a brokerage called the Ambassador Group that I now own. I bought from him. Home, auto, life, health, all that sort of stuff, commercial. He never did a lot of commercial. So after 3 years of doing it, I just remember I had a come to, you know, whatever, Buddha in my head while I was sitting out sweating my you-know-what off by the airport. And I'm in a junkyard. I'm insuring a junkyard, okay? And the guy was so rude and so, it just, you know, and I'm still in my 20s and I'm just like, what am I doing? So I just went and had some lunch with some friends that were in the hospitality industry. Because I knew I loved the hospitality. I knew I loved entertainment. That was my background. That was my passion. I had posters of, you know, Eddie Van Halen on my wall when I was a kid, and I literally meditated to the fact that one day I will work with him. And guess what? One day I was sitting on stage sharing a cigarette with him, and I don't even smoke, but that's how enamored I was. So whatever I put in my head, whatever I meditate and dream on, it just comes true because that's just the way that it works if you truly believe. So I went and I started barandrestaurantinsurance.com about 17 years into my insurance career, took that leap of faith, still continued to live with my parents and not have female relations, but that was okay because I was going to make my own. And so 17 years later, I now own a company. The main focus is around all hospitality. We do still have the home auto division. My dad still works with me. I keep him on board because he would be bored if he had, you know, nothing to do. And he's still really good at what he does. But, for a commercial agent to take a leap of faith like that and get into hospitality, which is a very volatile business as it is, I've owned 13 restaurants myself. I've failed, probably in 70% of them. So I understand the bottom lines and what goes on and this and that. And so that's basically how all that came to fruition so I could help out with, you know, restaurateurs.
So just to put all my cards on the table, the very first time I came to Phoenix independently as an adult was to come to a Van Halen concert. I think it was 91 or 92, actually.
Cool.
The For Unlawful Carnal Knowledge tour. And my cousin who had gone to boarding school here in Scottsdale and I drove from Southern California, went to the concert, and we were so fired up at the end. We're like, man, let's just drive back to California, you know, and we pulled in about 4 o'clock in the morning, super, you know, tired and whatever, but like, oh, that was great. What is it, do you think, about the hospitality industry that drew you? Were you always a foodie yourself, or why did you get into restaurants in the first place? Kind of how, connect the dots between that moment of enlightenment in the junkyard. Mm-hmm. The Buddha had his under the Bodhi tree. You had yours in the junkyard.
Yeah.
You realize, like, what am I doing? What's it come to? How did you decide that this was the direction you wanted to go?
Well, for me, it's about people. And I like people that are creative, artistic, that are into creating community, building community. For me, it's about really protecting community and being a part of that and not something where they look at it and they say, I gotta get this, you know, like payroll processing or credit. Yeah, it's about having that relationship with them and being able to help them more and more. So the moment of enlightenment really was just, that's always how I've been. I've been an entrepreneur. I've been somebody that has been always wanting to perform and be a part of something bigger. And in Arizona, the food scene out here is amazing. You know, there's a lot of creatives. There's a lot of great people doing a lot of stuff. And then as I got more in detailed with it, I started meeting really cool people and becoming, you know, able to own restaurants and be on that side of the fence.
Dala, you mentioned in our previous interview that you moved here to go to ASU in 2001. Mm-hmm. And at that time, there was not much of a food scene, certainly nothing like there is now in 2019.
That's right.
What are your observations on the evolution of the food and beverage industry here? You've been observing it mm-hmm. from those early days. I mean, as has D'Lo, but what's your perspective on it?
So my first exposure to really bars and restaurants that seemed to be successful were Sam Fox's concepts. Those were the first to pop up around the valley. And I think he had the courage to pave the way for other creatives that had ideas of their own. I think that recently we've been moving away from the giant, let's call them chains that we see throughout the valley to more mom and pop restaurants. And maybe there's one or four of them and they're more unique experiences. And, you know, you get to, when you dine, you get to meet the owner just like you did when you were at Rotten Grapes. And I think that that's what we're hungry for these days. And I'm seeing a lot more of that. So it's really giving permission to smaller creatives to do big things.
One of the things I love about some of your concepts and executions is the way you found ways to tell the community's story as part of the design inspiration mm-hmm. Through historic photographs or through other elements. Why was that approach something that you resonated with, or what about that is important?
So I'm sure you've heard the word Instagrammable thrown around. People want spaces that are Instagrammable. But beyond that, I think what they're really saying is we need a marketing strategy for our bar or restaurant. And so I think that our design solutions should really keep that in mind. And so by getting the community involved in the development of the restaurant, I think is a good way to kind of get the buzz going before the bar or restaurant opens.
Patty, community is such an important part of the vibe and the business model in restaurants like yours, right? Mm-hmm. And you've got some unique approaches as well. Talk a little bit, first of all, in a more general way about how you think about community as the owner of these two locations, Rotten Grapes Uptown and Rotten Grapes Roro. And then also specifically, maybe you want to talk a little bit about the wine club and how that initiative has drawn people into something even beyond just the menu at the restaurant.
So when we look at the locations that we chose, there was a large part of, you know, being on the fringe of a community of people that really had nowhere that they could walk to. Or if they could, they were starting to get, you know, saturated, that sort of thing. So we came up with this concept that was very community friendly. It's a locals feel, a locals vibe. And as Dala pointed out, you know, we are a mom and pop organization. So Keith and I are typically there most of the time. They see more of Keith than they do me. He's kind of the day shift. I'm the evening shift, but I'm working out of the home office quite a bit because I handle all the marketing. But I am marketing, and I'm really trying to reach out to our community and listen to what they're wanting and what their needs are. So that's why we've started doing certain things with our local artists. So we've been doing comedy for, gosh, a year and a half or so now. And we've been doing... just recently, we started doing trivia at our Roosevelt location, but we've been doing trivia for quite a while, too, at our Uptown location, and that's always fun for the locals to walk into and have fun with that. So what's coming up, too, as we talk about art, is we're going to start doing some short film nights, And so that's on the schedule coming up on Saturday the 27th. But we'll start doing that on a regular basis, and all this will be on our website. And then the other thing, too, that has been communicated that people are really interested in is storytelling. So we're actually going to start doing a storytelling night. So a lot of people have stories to tell.
Amazing.
And we would love to hear them.
And which or both locations?
So right now we're going to, because we're really trying to get more attention to our Onyx Basement Lounge. And we're going to do a lot of that down there because it's definitely more privatized and we can have that sort of, you know, speaking engagement and showing films down there without, you know, intruding on people that are coming in to dine.
And that's the Roosevelt Row location.
Yes. Yeah. Third Ave.
So I love that little space when you gave us a tour. Such an intimate, almost speakeasy feel.
Yeah.
But, you know, very accessible, interesting neighborhood, a lot of fun stuff going on.
And it's a nice, cool getaway, you know, the summertime.
Well,
you know,
to get below ground is not something you can do very often around here. So that's kind of neat.
Yeah.
Talk about the wine club. Obviously, going back to the age of 12, you've been a wino, but what inspired you to add that offering?
So it goes back to a lot of, you know, the extracurricular activities. When Keith and I traveled before we owned a restaurant, we would always seek out these little locals places, somewhere where we could go and find a nice eclectic list of wines to choose from or even craft beer. And it was really difficult to find places like that because I think they struggled in, you know, getting outside of that, you know, the norm, the Bud Light commercials and, you know, all of the mass, you know, marketing that's around the well-known brands. So people like us, and we were finding them more and more that love those types of, you know, hidden gems where, you know, you could go and get a really great glass of wine for, you know, a decent price and, you know, get a nice bite to eat. So little did we know, we were actually taking notes throughout all of our traveling of the place that we were eventually going to be building, the brand that we were going to build. So that started our love of wine. And then, of course, we had, you know, the dogs and the Rotties. So
Keith's background is not in the restaurant business, and you've got this design experience. What was the point when you decided, hey, we want to do this? We want to open our own place?
Yeah, there was definitely a moment of insanity that happened. And we were working with lots of other companies, new startup companies, helping them build their brand. And then we just, you know, at one point said, why are we doing this for other people? You know, what time to look in the mirror and say, you know, it's our turn. So we really went back and forth around a lot of different ideas of what we thought we would want to do. And then it came down to what our passions are. And, you know, we really always enjoyed going out for a nice glass of wine. And that kind of really what took us down this road, you know, somewhere where you could bring your dog as well. So that was also something that always had to fit into the plans, you know, have to be able to bring the dog, you know, to the patio or, you know, hang out with your dog and that sort of thing.
Now, for a restaurant or bar goer, a nice glass of wine, a nice dinner out is one kind of experience. For the restaurant owner, you might be thinking in terms of the wine list, the skilled sommelier, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But D'Lo, there's another dimension to all of this, which is the liability side of the equation. The liquor liability laws are a big deal. And I know that one of your roles is to really advise business owners, bar owners, restaurant owners, and how to think about protecting the asset that they're building. Can you talk to us a little bit about the issues around liquor liability and the kinds of protections you're recommending or advising people do?
Liquor liability is the number one exposure in the state of Arizona. And I say the state of Arizona because all states have different liquor laws, you know, basically pertaining to what goes on there and this and that. So Arizona has what's called basically, I call it they just need to be knowingly intoxicated law. And that's what's in Title IV, which is the name of Arizona liquor law. So all you have to do is serve one drink to somebody that is quote unquote noticeably intoxicated, bunny ears or quotations. And what happens at that point is not only that establishment, but all the other ones down the road can all get drug into a lawsuit. So God forbid that person leaves your establishment, only has one drink, doesn't matter. And they go and they kill somebody on the 101. Unfortunately, I've had these claims too many times in, you know, 20 years of doing insurance. And generally the person that is driving that is drunk, they're the ones that are not injured. It's the other party that ends up getting injured, or maybe their kid, or I mean, they're really bad situations, or somebody loses a leg or something like that. So the families of those parties, or the surviving party, they go and they sue the person that, you know, is driving drunk, and they generally don't have enough insurance coverage because state minimum limits are usually what they have. And that's really, they just raised the minimum limits of auto liability to $2,550 now, which just happened. But it's generally never enough for a fatality or for losing a limb or not being able to work or, you know, perform the rest of your life. So what happens is the establishment or establishments all get named in the lawsuit because they supposedly carry liquor liability. Again, you don't have to carry liquor liability in the state of Arizona, but quite frankly, you could probably lose your business if something like that were to happen, even if you're not quote unquote guilty. Even if they don't find sheer negligence on your part, the attorneys are able to sue any and everybody down the road, whether they have viable evidence or not. And so really what that insurance policy comes into play for is defense cost. They defend the restaurants and the bars until they can figure out, you know, how to come up with a settlement and not go to court. So it's a really prominent issue in Arizona, where just an example, like California, you have to overserve somebody that is a minor. That's pretty much clear cut the law. They have to be under 21. If you serve them, you're liable. If not, you're not. Vegas, there's no law. They don't even carry dram shop out there. It's a joke. So for many years, been trying to get Arizona law changed more favorable to the establishment to create more of a burden of proof before they can get sued. But you have to change. It's a constitutional change that you have to change within Title IV. And you can only imagine when you're making a constitutional change, that's all of Arizona. You have to get everybody on board.
Yeah, it's supposed to be hard for a reason.
Correct.
Because there's a lot of special interests that would like to do that just willy-nilly. And of course, we want to protect the citizens and the state from that. But as you say, this is a very, very important issue. I mean, certainly in the 7 years that I've lived here in Arizona, you know, seeing the headlines, you know, for fatal crashes where, you know, alcohol was involved, and then also seeing the follow-up stories where the establishment that was serving the driver is now implicated in the lawsuit. It's a very real and very challenging thing. Does everybody realize this, or do you have to do a lot of education to get bar and restaurant owners to realize the extent of their exposure?
I have, yes, is the short answer to your question, and I do continuing education all the time. We have a subsect of our company that does liquor training for all servers, managers, employees. That's important. If I'm going to write anybody's insurance, I want to make sure that they have the training certifications and that they are at least knowledgeable in that, you know.
Is that something equivalent to TIPS? Or I know there's a couple different types of training.
Exactly.
There's other exposures that restaurant and bar owners have, and they may not realize they have things that are increasingly being litigated around food contamination or data breaches.
Right.
Of course, you've got employment-related cases, discrimination or labor disputes of various kinds. So you're not just talking about liquor liability. You're trying to put together a whole package of protections that cover everything from workman's comp all the way through to some of the specifics that you were describing. How do you help an owner navigate that landscape?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really good question. So owning restaurants myself, understanding that your bottom line margin, if it's in the plus percentages, you're doing well, it's tough. And it's like, what are we going to spend money on to protect ourselves, to be able to sleep at night for? So really my job is to go in, take the information, put together numbers and coverages based on any and every exposure that I can think of that I've seen over the years. And you bring up employment practices. That's a huge one. That's becoming more and more. Has people from California come over to here? A lot of that mindset and those aspects come over here because we're seeing an influx of people getting sued for discrimination, sexual harassment, right or wrong. It's happening. And so if you don't have the adequate coverage for that, you as an owner of an establishment, whatever it is, bar, restaurant, anything, you're going to end up paying for it. But in the same breath, it's like a lot of these owners that are on premise, oh, we don't have that problem. That'll never happen. Cool. But you were made aware. Here's the price for it. Here's the coverages. And still to this day, many of them just don't even buy it because unless it's in their lease and it's really dictated that they need it, or it makes sense like liquor liability because they really feel that that's more of something that could really close them down, then they do buy it. And cyber, that's a buzzword right now. I don't know how, I mean, coming from my, not the insurance person, but the other aspect, I don't see a lot of breaches or a lot of dangers in that as you would think or what you hear.
But the exposure is there.
The exposure is there.
The exposure is there. If you're collecting email addresses for your Wine of the Month Club or your newsletter, you're collecting personal data. And now under GDPR rules in the EU, there's probably somebody itching to try a test case in a U.S. court. If, for example, the upstream data provider were hacked, could the downstream restaurant owners become caught up in this if they can show you weren't protecting yourself? If you've got Wi-Fi, if somebody's bank logs into their bank account from your Wi-Fi and you know it's not secured Wi-Fi, and then there's a hacking, they might. So I don't know. These are speculative. I'm not aware of any actual cases, but given our devices are connected 24/7 and we're doing all of our sensitive data everywhere we go, there's probably some exposure there that needs to be looked at carefully.
And there definitely is. And there's definitely a bunch of layers to who's responsible for what and how that works. And so to get back to your point, yes, the exposure is there. But again, when you're dealing in the hospitality industry and you're giving them carte blanche buffet of everything to, you know, to chew off on, they're going to be like, I'll take the liquor liability and not the cyber. I think we're going to be okay on that.
Yeah,
and that's
enough.
A lot of that happens. Now, that being said, also in certain policies, cyber, like sublimits of cyber are coming with the policies. So they get a little bit with their general liability policy and their liquor policy now because the insurance carriers are understanding that that's a little bit of an exposure that's becoming more prevalent and they want to include it.
You mentioned earlier, just in passing, property lease requirements. Is this an increasing trend where in the commercial real estate side of things, somebody looking to open a new location might be having insurance limits prescribed for them mm-hmm. by the landlord?
Yeah. And I say this with peace and love. A lot of my friends are good attorneys, this and that, but who are leases written up by? They're written up by attorneys. When leases are broken, who litigates them? The attorneys. So, you know, every time a new restaurateur, even, you know, somebody getting another property are coming to me and they need a quote, first thing I ask them for is their lease. If I don't have a copy of the lease, I don't know what coverage they actually need per contractual agreement. And so you see more and more, oh, we want a $5 million umbrella. Oh, we want, and sometimes it can become so uncost affordable for the restaurant because the insurance is so much just to get in.
Dalla, back to you on the design side. You're also involved in complex negotiations. If you get involved early in a project, maybe even before a site has been selected, you're looking at so many different dimensions, literally and metaphorically,
right,
to try to help the visionary with the idea execute it in space and time and form. Who does that put you in dialogue with? Are you talking to landlords and the city and as well? What's the network of relationships your design firm is enmeshed in?
I don't really have direct communication with the landlord, but because I've had so much exposure to it, I can advise my clients on things that I've experienced in the past. What I have been able to build is this database of industry professionals that a new business owner would need to start looking at or hiring early on. And one of them is actually DLO because it's, you know, insurance is something that you may forget about because you're dreaming big and you're not thinking about the day-to-day details. But I'm more of a realistic person. Yes, we'll dream big with you, but hey, you've got to think about the important stuff too so that when we dream big, it actually works out.
Patty G, you said that you spend a lot of your time focused on marketing. What are some of the current trends? What are you paying attention to? What are you building into your marketing approach? What does it take these days, especially in a very hot and competitive industry, in a location, geographical area like ours, what does it take to cut through the noise and start to build those kind of brand awareness campaigns?
Yeah, I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, we always say, you know, our service and the quality of our products, you know, speak bounds as to, you know, why we are where we're at. But getting that messaging out to the community and letting them know that, you know, we're not just another, you know, little startup. You know, we've done our homework. We've got, you know, professionals that we're working with. We do deliver a great product. And I think it's really about focusing on those products and, you know, making it a fun venue. So that thus all of the different events now that we're rolling out and have been doing. So I think it's really about communicating that we have, you know, one of the best products out there, you know, in our area. We're easy to get to. We actually have parking, unlike some of the other, you know, real populous areas around Central on Roosevelt. We actually, you know, again, we have some parking. We are walking distance, you know, from the light rail, you know, and it's a multi-use type of space. So if you've got an event, we can probably, you know, entertain and host your event. And we do catering. So we're really trying to well-round and get our brand out there in terms of all these various things and all these facets that, you know, that community is looking for. So even if they live down the street, doesn't mean they want to get out in the heat and, you know, walk over to our place. I get it. Just walking from the parking garage into our space is like, wow.
Yeah, six blocks on a summer night is a long trek.
We're on Uber. We've got Postmates. We've got Grubhub. And there's some special people in the community at Portland on the Park and Roosevelt Square that, you know, we've told them we'll deliver to you. So, you know, because they're right there and they've got a lot of, you know, money to spend. So, they love our restaurant. So it's, you know, those little things that are setting us apart in that, you know, they love our food, but sometimes it's just easier to stay in that nice, cool living room on the couch with Netflix going. So
I get it. That's what the kids tell me.
I get it.
What are some of the broader trends? I'd be interested in anyone's opinion on this. What are you seeing in the scene itself? What's hot? And perhaps even go a little further. What do you wish there were more of? Dala, do you want to start us off?
Sure. I think, I mean, Patty kind of touched on this, but people are looking for more than a dining experience. Good service and good food is kind of the expected foundation. Beyond that, they're looking for interesting experiences, whether that's, you know, dining and watching a live artist paint in front of you, or being able to contribute to the playlist that's playing at the restaurant. I mean, people are wanting to be so close to the brand and be involved in its development. So, yeah.
I'm going to go with the fact of the population boom and the fact that minimum wage is going back up again. You're starting to see already the trend of fast casual, and it's just going to increase and increase. And you're going to see robots, and you're going to see one or two people behind the counter. I mean, it's happening, whether people acknowledge it or not, it's happening. And it's not necessarily a bad thing, because then the more creative places that are doing the stuff that Dala just talked about are going to be those places that people really want to go to be a part of community and make an event and a night out of it. And then you're going to have the other aspect of stuff where people are just going to want to grab and go home and watch Netflix.
Yeah, because I mean, what are they going to Yelp about if, you know, a robot serving
totally.
Them? They're like, my server didn't smile at me.
C-3PO is mad at me.
How could you tell? So yeah, to your point, I mean, you kind of really covered everything, and I'm not really sure where to go with that.
Well, also you may not, I don't know, if it, as you, Keith, own two locations, mm-hmm. and you've got the operations as well as the marketing as well as everything. So not only are you not traveling internationally as much as I'm sure you would like to, maybe you're not out on the town as much as you would like to.
True.
When people come in, though, and you interact with them, I know you do. That's how we met. Mm-hmm. What are you hearing through them about what they're liking at your locations or what's going on outside?
Well, they're really loving the space, and I always definitely, you know, commend Dala for that. And they love that they can see themselves coming back in, you know, to do any number of things, coming in for, you know, we have a dinner special every Wednesday night, and then they see, you know, all these wonderful entrees that they want to try, and that's a great night to do it. And then we also have the comedy, so they're in the comedy, you know, and then they see, you know, we have this great mezzanine area that's going to be perfect for for that, you know, baby shower or the wedding shower that they have coming up or something like that. And then, you know, they come in one Friday or Saturday night and they check out the speakeasy. Yeah, the Onyx we just refer to as our basement lounge, but people have had numerous parties down there because it keeps them, you know, out of the main the main area, and they can really have a great time and mingle with everyone in their party. We can do some light bites down there, and they can control the music. They can put their own tunes on. So, you know, those types of things are definitely a draw because of having a multi-use space like that. And that's not to discount Uptown. Uptown also has that lounge area too across the walkway. A lot of people get that deer in the headlights look when they come through the walkway and they look to the right, they look to the left, and they're not sure where to go. And, you know, they see the open window, you know, bar, and we have to wave them in like, hey, come over here. Yeah. So, you know, there's that friendly aspect of Uptown too, because it's such a small, you know, kind of spread out venue. So that makes that spot a lot of fun too. And you can pretty much have the run of the place if you have a party or some sort of gathering too. So that's a great one for networking.
When I was visiting the Roro location, one of the people in our crew was instantly inspired and was thinking of all different kinds of events. I think really just pay a visit and go down into the Onyx Lounge or ask to be shown it if it's not currently open, and just take a look, because it really is, when you see it, you immediately start thinking of, oh, I could do this here, I could do that here. You know, I could have an event of some kind. I could have a business, I mean, an after hours thing. I mean, it's a really, really cool location. One of the things we haven't talked much about is really what drives this whole industry, and that is the people. Obviously, news headlines point to turnover on the labor side of the business as one of the big challenges in the Valley. With so many, you know, hot places to work, it's increasingly competitive for staff, and you might get, you know, everyone from, you know, a dishwasher to a front of the house kind of person who sees 50 cents more an hour somewhere else as a reason to leave when there's almost no downside, it seems like, to them. At the same time, the top talent is increasingly looking to the Valley, and in many cases already here. So what's going on the people side of this business? What are you seeing, Patty, from the business owner perspective? And then I'd be interested in hearing you guys look at it from your lens as well.
Yeah, I'm very proud that we have several original employees at our Roosevelt location. And, you know, when we talk to them and we ask, you know, how things are going and how they're feeling about everything, because we definitely want to have those touch points with all of our staff and make sure they have the tools in their toolbox. So, you know, if it's more training they need, great, we'll arrange that. If they feel there's some, you know, things that are you know, needing to be upgraded around the restaurant, you know, we always look to support our staff. And I think that's the biggest thing that they appreciate. And it's helping them, you know, on nights like last night, where, you know, you have like multiple tables come in all at once, and, you know, we're there to help bus tables. We're there to help out the back of house too with dishes. You know, we're always trying to support, and they get that. So that in itself is very appreciated by the staff, and they get that. And I think that alone, apart from, you know, getting potentially another 50 cents more somewhere else, I think speaks volumes to why they have stayed with us. And we're always focused on making sure they're having fun. I mean, that's the biggest thing. Yeah. You got to have fun when you go to work.
That was definitely the sense I had, was that people were part of the family.
Yeah.
And that's got to be an important dimension in any successful business. D'Lo, as you look out and through your, I mean, you've got hundreds of clients in the insurance side of things, as you look out at the general industry, what's happening on the staffing or even leadership side?
Well, I'll give huge kudos to Upward Projects and to Fox, and I say that not just because the food's delicious and they do a great job with systems and management and all that, and they create that team unity, but some of my best clients to date have all come from there. And it's like those two concepts just like rawr, breed these little babies, and then these babies come out and they have some amazing concepts when you look at Cotton and Copper and Worth Takeaway, and, you know, the names go on. So that's really cool to see, and kind of an incestuous growth of really cool, you know, concepts popping out of bigger ones that were successful out here.
And they also, from what I understand at a distance, having listened to some of their leaders speak about this issue, have a really strong push around culture that runs across their different properties, and really trying to connect with people and get people connected to something greater than themselves. what about in turnover and on the staffing side of the thing? Is this as much of a challenge as it's kind of being bandied about, or is it really not that big a deal? You'd find that anywhere.
It's more of a challenge in the hospitality industry for sure. I mean, I am now getting phone calls from people that have apps. They call it the Uber app for hiring now, where you can literally as an owner, get on your phone and you can hire your five people for the day that are in this pool. So there's stuff like this that is short term. Yeah. So it's developed. It's here. It's like coming its way. And then the app, I don't know if all this is 100%, but from what I was being told, the people that own the app, they're the actual employer. And so you're just like renting their employers for the day that are supposedly knowledgeable about the hospitality industry. So we'll see how all that goes. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, give and takes with that sort of thing. But yes, back to your question, it's a little bit more difficult in the hospitality industry for sure.
It doesn't surprise me at all that technology is moving in. Just yesterday in the studio, we had two HR-focused people, one from Insperity, which is a large national HR services firm, and then one from Aligned at Work, which is a more niche training and development, leadership development agency. And we talked about tech and the way in which technology is moving into anything that is time consuming but follows rules and patterns. And so, you know, if you think about from the perspective of an owner, if you're having scheduling is a huge aspect of running any team like this. And if you end up with a gap, how do you fill the gap? Well, if there's an app that can get you a skilled dishwasher or busser or even server on short-term notice, it makes a lot of sense. One of the things that I was fascinated by in that conversation, just to share some of that intel with you, is that Insperity works as a co-employer with the businesses that bring them in to provide full suite of HR services. So there's some unique and evolving ways in which these partnerships take place. Yeah. Exciting to see that at least there's some attempts made to solve problems using technology. And of course, every solution creates its own new set of problems, but that's okay. We get to innovate as we go. Dalla, you got your eye on a lot of things, both in the world of design, which goes into aesthetics as well as experience and many other dimensions, as well as what it takes to have these establishments become successful. Mm-hmm. What do you see out there on the people side of this equation?
Owner or employer side, employee?
On the employer side,
okay.
The owner side,
uh-huh.
That's probably who you're interacting with
more.
But as you go out and visit places, looking for inspiration, keep a sense of trends, you see the other side as well. So give us what you got.
Well, from the owner's side, I would say that it's this balancing act of their passion and what the audience wants, right? Because they may be two colliding things. And to be a successful business, again, it's the bottom line. So I think it's, you know, honoring what the owner's vision is for the space in balance with what community wants. On the employees' side, I think I'm seeing more of a family feel. There's a lot of profit sharing happening out there so that people actually feel like they are a part of the business, which means that their longevity with the company is a lot longer. So I think that's a way to help resolve the turnover.
One of the things that we talked about last time you were here was the unique way you have packaged your services to make them accessible, to avoid kind of industry speak.
Yes.
To really help an owner or someone with an idea understand how best to work with you.
Yes.
And you told me recently you had just flown off to the Bay Area in California to do a design sprint.
Yes.
And that's not one of the things we had talked about. What is a design sprint?
Yes.
I'm familiar with the language out of agile development in tech, but how does it work in interior design and experience design for the hospitality industry?
Yeah, this is something that transpired after we met. And it was because I took some time to listen to my clients and find out where there was a gap and where I could come in and fill that gap. But as we grow as a boutique firm, our projects are getting bigger and the budgets are getting bigger. But I don't want to lose my foundation, which is helping businesses that deserve the extra help. Yes, it may be out of budget, but we've created a new offering called a 24-hour design sprint, and it's basically 24 hours of our design time at a much reduced rate. So rather than giving the client the full package, it's almost a DIY package where we put together design, hand it over to them in a manual form, and they take it on themselves.
Now, you've also done, and this is not traditional for you, or at least in your experience, you've also done some design at a distance.
Yes.
The coffee shop in Kuwait is an example where you created an entire concept and delivered what they needed to execute on it, and you never went to the space, even though you were born in Kuwait.
Right.
So how are you evolving your own ways of working? The design sprint is one. What else is kind of percolating?
Let's see. Tough question to answer. I think we're becoming more accepting of the digital world. I was opposed to it because I'm a person-to-person type of person, and I love that communication. But I'm finding that my clients across the board are wanting to jump on a video call or a phone conference rather than making the drive, even if they're here in the Valley. Even better when they're in another state because it alleviates the cost of having to fly out and communicate. So I think we're streamlining our processes by really being efficient and pre-planning our get-together so that we don't have to have 20 meetings. We can boil it down to one or two.
This is just one man's opinion, but I'm already so intrigued by your background and your family history. I think you have more media and comms in your DNA, like literally in your DNA, than maybe you have realized will make an impact in your business. Uh-huh. I mean, was it your grandmother? Your mother was a broadcaster.
And my grandmother as well.
And your grandmother as well. Really industry leading women's voices in the Gulf and in the Middle East.
Yes.
And now you are broadcasting on Instagram. Instagram stories and lives are an essential part of your business. Now, of course, everybody can do that, but there's something unique in the way you're approaching this. Have you realized yet that you are a media company as well as a design firm?
Yes. My business coach has made me aware of that. That was not the language I was using, but I think it's kind of cool that I'm following in the footprints of my grandmother and mother, but in my own way. And really how this came about, and just for anyone that is not familiar, I've been posting a lot of short clips or tips about everything we do on a day-to-day basis. And it's a way to educate the community about what it is we do exactly, because I think interior design is misunderstood.
Dilo, you also have really broken ground in a new direction not that long ago, by embracing social media content creation, live streams, podcast. You're moving not just from an insurance broker expert doing workshops in conference rooms to really communicating and nurturing and educating people online. What about that? Are you inspired about what's working? What kind of give us a sense behind the scenes? You guys are creating a lot of content these days. What's that like for you?
So probably about a year and a half ago is when I've always been active on Facebook. About a year and a half ago is when I really got active on just posting every day and posting community and posting who I work with, why I work with them, how I work with them, and informational tips and all that sort of stuff. So I've really enjoyed it. I've got a lot of good feedback from it. I never understood the algorithms or how any of that stuff works, nor did I care. I'm just a guy that sells insurance at the end of the day that loves the hospitality industry. But through that, I've made a lot of great connections. People are becoming aware. And when people, see me on LinkedIn and Instagram and Facebook, they're like, wow, you insure them. You insure everybody. Perception is everything. What you throw out there.
Absolutely.
A lot of times people will just, make an assumption that everybody's looking. So I always do that. And it's not a matter of how many likes you get or how many this or that. Nothing to do with that. It's just about, again, building community and getting everybody involved. Everybody is involved in your business, their business, that sort of thing, so that we can all kind of work together. So through that, it's parlayed into something to where I've been wanting to do a podcast for a year. I just pulled the trigger. I sat in my backyard. I bought a mic and I had a iPad and I just started talking to myself. And I was like, this is cool. A couple of my friends chimed in. They're like, you have did a good job. Okay, whatever. So I started booking up interviews. And then that progressed into finding one of my interviews was a social media company out of here that specializes in Instagram and Facebook called The Local 480. And after interviewing them, they came back to me with a proposal to film my podcast and to air them and create these short snippets and some of these things, you know, other things that go on. I think you even listened to my Aaron Chamberlain one because he had got a message from you. So that was really cool. I mean, I had never met Patty G before. Like, I was like, and she's chiming in on Aaron Chamberlain's podcast with him telling his story. And for me, the podcast was all about people telling their story. It's not about me. It's not about insurance. It's not about any of that. It's about these really talented people out here that are busting their you-know-whats to run their business, to just tell their story, because I think people love stories. And so that's what Instagram is about as well. It's about storytelling. And so now we're creating short, you know, Netflix-type stories through Instagram, and we're trying to help out the hospitality industry so that I can create more added value for my clients and other people out there to get their name out there, but to a visual audience that they may not have had. And so once the local 480 guys, going back to that, came out with this proposal to do my podcast, they then came to me after that and said, would you be president of our company and the face of it and part owner? And I was like, well, how come? And they're like, because we're really the nerds and you're the connections and we want to blow up what you're doing and kind of combine it all together. And so that's where we're at now. And I'm totally excited about it.
It's maybe an unfair comparison, but it takes me back to not one of the greatest movies ever, but Fast Times at Ridgemont High. You're not the Spicoli character, but you are the guy selling Van Halen tickets in the hallway.
For sure.
And something about that.
With a mullet.
Right.
Exactly. I had one.
That guy.
That's cool. Sweet.
Being adjacent to and supporting talent is something that runs throughout every story you've told today in this on this show. So I'm inspired by what you're up to as you find your own unique expression to not only serve the industry through the insurance products that you have available that are essential to not losing the house, literally,
right.
But also the way in which you're bringing that media sensibility to your work as well. Patty, we'll give you the last word on this conversation. Obviously, everyone likes to Instagram their plate. And so you have, not everyone, but a lot of folks, you've got a lot of community-generated content in addition to the more formal professional marketing materials, images, words. How's that all playing out for you? What's your sense of it?
You know, everybody's got these lovely smartphones and they take amazing pictures, most of them. You know, if you have the right lighting or some sort of, you know, filter on your phone, you can take some pretty cool pictures. So yeah, there's definitely a lot of community-driven imagery out there of our products and, you know, just people having a great time that, you know, we're just like, this is great. Google has been amazing about collecting a lot of that. So, you know, and it does it for each location automatically. So it cuts out a lot of work from, you know, what I have to go out and organize. So yeah, that's been really awesome to have people, you know, snap pictures at our place and of, you know, the decor and, you know, their cocktails and, you know.
It really goes to the heart of something. I have a theory and we can't test it or prove it here, but that the nature of experience is changing. And so for a bar or a restaurant, it's not only what happens inside that space, it's the way in which that gets connected out into the lives and followings of the people who come in. And so designing spaces, as Dala does, not only about the aesthetics, the lighting, the decor, the furnishings, et cetera, but also we've talked about the sound design, the other aspects of it, but really designing the experience itself to make it something that reaches out of the room and into the communities, plural, of the patrons, I think is really the wave of the future. The boxes that things happen inside of, the physical four walls, are not the limit in any way now, given people share so much and conversations get started in all kinds of fascinating ways. Well, we're out of time for the show. I feel like I could talk with you guys forever. This is a fascinating conversation, but let's just do a quick roundup. Dala, where do you want people to connect with you to learn more about FJI and about the work you're doing?
Sure. So we are most active on Instagram. That's fji.design. We have the same handle on all other platforms. So Facebook and the website as well is fji.design.
And that's your website. So
yes,
it's important for people to realize that this is one of the new domains.
Yes.
And the website is fji.design.
Yes, nothing not .design.com. No.
That's right.
It's just .design.
fji.design. Wonderful. Thank you, as always,
sharing
your insights with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Dilo, where do people connect with you and learn more about what's going on, both on the insurance side as well as your social media productions?
Yeah, on the insurance side, we have at bar and restaurant insurance. And then I also have the podcast is called Bar Restaurant Podcast. I try to keep stuff real simple. If you want to watch me do a workout in my driveway with the skier or the rower, that's at the D-Lo. It's quite entertaining and 115 degrees. I don't care. It's fun. And then, and you can always find me on Facebook. So,
and Patty G, people obviously should visit Rotten Grapes, two amazing locations, one in Uptown, one in Roosevelt Row. But in addition to that, where do they connect with you and learn more about what you're up to?
Yeah, I know. Please come in and let me talk to you about wine because that's what I love to do. Let's taste some wine. But yeah, Instagram is definitely probably our fave. We've got, you know, our Rotten Grapes is our handle. There's no E there. It's R-O-T-T-N. And then, you know, we definitely put all of our events on Facebook. And then we have our website too. So it's rottengrapes.com.
Marvelous. Well, thank you all very much for contributing your insights. I'm excited by the trends and the evolution of the hospitality industry here in the Valley and look forward to hearing more from all of you. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Adrian.
For all of us here at Business Radio X, this is Dr. Adrian McIntyre, and we'll see you next time on Valley Business Radio.